You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. I am Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com and the Step Back. Joining me today from FearTheSword.com, he is Mike Savgano. Mike, how are you?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. We are recording this Wednesday night. The Cavs will be playing the Houston Rockets on Thursday in a game that should be really interesting for a number of reasons. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but Mike and I are going to dive into some of what he's written about, some of what he's been tweeting about a lot lately. You can give him a follow at mzevgano11. He's a must-Cavs follow there if you want to get a lot of interesting lineup data and some breakdowns of games. But, Mike, we're going to start with everyone's favorite player. It's Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose is what he is at this point. I think you and I can only say so much about how bad he's been and the struggles he's had. I think, you know, it's in a one game the other night against when they beat the Bucks. I did the player grades for Fear the Sword, and everyone except Derrick Rose got at least a C. Rose was a D. Out of the guys that have played most games, you know, not in the non Jose Calderon, Zizic, Chetty Osman division, I think that Rose has been the worst rotation player on the Cavs, and I don't think it's particularly close.
It's interesting when Iman Shumpert comes into the game and you're like, oh, wow, at least Shumpert's in. And I think that's where we've gotten with Derrick Rose, which is you would never expect something like that for Cavs fans, given how Iman Shumpert has been treated the last few years.
It's a super good point. Like, Iman Shumpert has been the guy that Cavs can pick on, the guy that Cavs fans look at and get really angry about and can't stand it, and that for a lot of fans, that is Rose, and for a lot of people watching the team, I think it's fairly obvious that Rose is an issue, and we're not going to spend a ton of time talking about him because he is what he is, but you know, he's not shooting well, really. I mean, he's shooting okay from the field in 7 games, but not shooting well from 3, turning the ball over quite a bit so far. He's had an issue getting into the lane and just finding open shooters, something the Cavs really want him to do. Mike, I'm going to ask you two things here. One, you've tweeted kind of frustrated about this, and I get it, but Tyronn Lue has kind of defended him in post-game pressers. So on that first note, what do you make of what Lue has said about Derrick Rose when he said that his mistakes are because they're fine because he's attacking aggressively, and he's kind of doing the same type of stuff that they do want Rose to be doing?
To me, it's fairly frustrating, just the whole rhetoric surrounding what Derrick Rose has done so far. Obviously, I guess if you're looking at it from a value standpoint, him shooting in the restricted area is better than him shooting anywhere else, seeing that he's currently 8-for-30 outside of the restricted area this season. It's really hard for me to embrace what Lou has been saying, just because Rose is so unwilling to pass the ball to his teammates when he drives. It's basically once he puts his head down and he's made his decision to shoot, he really doesn't deviate from that course, regardless of who's in front of him. And what you get is, a guy who has now 19 turnovers and only 11 assists on the season, and a guy who has the lowest assist percentage at 10.2 of any point guard in the NBA, and a 17.1 turnover percentage, which is in the 15th percentile. So he's really a guy that, unless he's making these layups, which
they're kind of crazy looking layups. Like they look out of control. And that his thing is, he does this big sweeping motion with his arms where he's almost a clock almost. Like, that's the only way I can think of how his arms move, is he's completely contorting his body to get these layups off. And it's not smooth. It's rather like a rather violent motion almost for him to do this.
Yeah, it almost seems, I mean, who, you know, you don't really know or you can't really assess where guys are at mentally. But it does seem as if he's not necessarily okay with a lot of contact. And a lot of what he is doing once he gets into the air is trying to avoid that contact. And part of the problem is that when it seems like, you know, he's going to have to get into a guy's body, he ends up passing the ball or attempting to pass the ball out a lot of times as opposed to trying to finish at the rim. And, you know, that happened 3 or 4 times in the Bucks game where he just basically got caught up in the air, didn't want to shoot the ball, and he ends up turning the ball over. And those live ball turnovers, especially on this Cavs team, have just been absolutely killer because they're buckets the other way.
Yeah, and the other thing with Rose that I would say about his offense is that he, when he's attacking, it often comes in situations that I don't know exactly what he's totally doing. I think there are times where he's actually taking advantage of open opportunities, and that's what you want from him. But there's also times where he's just driving at 3 guys, and he flails a lot, and he's also just bad on defense. My thing with Lou's comments is for knowing what we know of Lou, I just don't expect him to say anything different. He's not going to bag Rose at all in pressers. That's just not his MO. He's not going to, his thing is not going to be to really crucify guys in the media. Like, he may say we need better things from these guys, but he's very particular, I think, about not really throwing guys under the bus. So I think it'd be very interesting to see what their relationship's like and how Rose is responding to this. And he's on this minute restriction, so maybe that's why, you know, he's not on the floor at the end of the Bucks game when, you know, Wade's in there for him. But considering what we know of him, considering that he's, you know, playing 27 minutes a night right now, that he's taking 12 shots a game, that he has a pretty high usage rate, and that the Cavs are going to start him for at least until Isaiah Thomas gets back. And then we kind of just assume that Thomas will get that role back. But what is, we just have to assume that Rose is going to play. That's just, I think, unavoidable. He's not going to be pushed out of the rotation for the foreseeable future. What is the way you make the most of what Derrick Rose is in 2017 on this Cavs roster?
I mean, if you're acknowledging that he has to start, I would say that your ideal position is probably to start him, but only play him a couple minutes, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 to start the game. And then you bring in Dwayne Wade, who I think has been the better of the two, even as a nominal point guard. You look at Wade, he has a nearly 27% assist percentage, and he's actually distributed the ball fairly well, in my opinion. And I think that if Rose's style is going to work at all in 2017, it's going to be more likely to be successful against bench units where the guards are probably a little bit slower. They're not as defensive-minded, and you're not going to have teams' elite rim protectors on the floor. So if Rose maybe could be, you know, the guy who's going to lead those second units, the role that basically Wade has assumed right now, you might see him have a bit more success in terms of his ability to both get to the rim and then actually finish there just because of the opposing personnel that's going to be on the floor.
Yeah. I think that's about right. I don't think you can play him with Wade at all. I think that's just a bad idea. I think they might have to try, but I don't think it makes sense. I don't think you can play him with Shumpert either. I think it's a weird thing because I kind of want to pair him with other shooters. So maybe that's J.R. Smith, maybe that's Kyle Korver, but those are the type of guys I want LeBron with too. I'm getting ahead of myself in saying this, but I think there's a chance that, like, he should just not be in the rotation. I've said this already, but when Isaiah comes back, if Isaiah's good to go and is back to being 80% of what Isaiah was, I think there's an argument to be made that Derrick Rose should just not be in the rotation, and that could be problematic in some ways. And, you know, you certainly have to feel for the guy in some level because he, I think, really was hoping this would be a chance to rebuild. But I think the fit's weird, and I wonder how the Cavs kind of will fit minutes for Isaiah, Rose, and Wade if they're kind of going to overlap and all struggle in similar ways, right? Like, these are guys that will struggle defensively and will struggle to kind of play with other guys that need the ball if they're not kind of just buying into that. And it was an adjustment for Wade, and it will continue to be an adjustment for Wade, but what their roles end up kind of being will be really interesting. And that's kind of where we are with Rose. I think game to game, he may have good games. Like, it wouldn't shock me, you know, when they play a team with bad point guard play and he just kind of has a quality game. Like, if he plays really well against the Dallas Mavericks, wouldn't shock me, right? Like, if he's attacking Dirk Nowitzki and Dennis Smith Jr. in a pick and roll, like, he's probably going to have a decent game because it's the Mavs, and the Mavs are atrocious. But he's playing the Hornets next week, right? Like, or if he's playing the Heat in a few weeks, or if he's playing, you know, even the Nets, like he's probably going to struggle a little bit. As a reminder, before we get into some more of the weeds of the Cavs' lineups, reminder that you can find all of the Locked On podcasts in one place on iTunes. Just search Locked On Podcasts. You will find every single NBA pod in one feed. That is how I listen to the network. So when I am prepping for this weekend's games, I'm checking out Locked On Rockets. I'm checking out Locked On Mavs. And you're going to get everything there in one place. So make sure you check that out and subscribe. Give 5-star ratings and reviews to that feed. And give it to Locked On Cavs while you're there as well, if you do not mind. Mike, looking ahead of this, we've kind of touched on this a little bit. The Cavs have experimented with lineups so far. They've had some bad lineups that rate out pretty badly so far in terms of just plus minus. They have had lineups that look okay. That I think they're trying to find the right bench unit still. And in particular, they closed started the fourth quarter the other night with a lineup that had not been used, something that it was new to the players, and using Wade, Korver, J.R. Smith, Jeff Green, and Amon Shumpert together as a five-man unit with no Love or LeBron on the floor to kind of anchor it with a lot of pressure there. And Wade, what are some lineups first that you have liked from Tyronn Lue so far this season, as the Cavs have had to do a lot of shuffling as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really, no matter where you've looked, at the Cavs have played better with Kyle Korver on the floor. You know, granted, he's shot the ball extremely well to open the season, but just his gravity on the offensive end really opens things up for most lineup sets that he's in, regardless of kind of who else is on the floor. In terms of what the Cavs are doing without LeBron, I actually think that Wade has done a pretty decent job in that distributor role.
I agree.
He's definitely still taking, you're never going to get out of him taking, 50, 60% of his shots from the mid range. That's just who he is and who he's going to be. But, I think he's at least a smart basketball player, and he's a veteran who's seen a lot of things. And so even in the short amount of time that we've had, these 10 games that he's played and, the 7 that he's come off the bench, I do think that he's made some adjustments to kind of fit in a little bit better to his role and what the Cavs are asking of him. So I do generally tend to like to see Kevin Love or LeBron James on the floor at all times. But in the iteration where, it's kind of been Wade and Jeff Green out there, I think that they've done a pretty decent job, and a much better job than they were doing last season when LeBron sat.
I think Wade, honestly, I think there you hear rumblings about the mood in the locker room, and it certainly has had its moment so far. And I think guys like J.R. Smith, guys like Amon Shumpert and stuff have been altered because of Wade's arrival. But I think the last two games he's made an effort to pick where he's going to attack and do what he does best, right? Like he describes himself all the time, particularly after games, if you go look at his comments, as a rhythm player. He's talked very openly about how like he felt like he was in a rhythm when he got here, and that makes sense because it's a new role for him and he's different in the pecking order. You saw the Hawks game. You saw a guy who attacked when the Cavs needed him to put his foot on the gas, right? Like that was what he did. Against the Bucks, not only was he trying on defense, and that really mattered, and I think Love for that mattered for Kevin Love too, but Wade felt like he fit in better with what they were doing. And I still have issues somewhat with how they're going to, what kind of sets are going to run for him. I don't totally love him playing without Kevin Love. And maybe that eventually, like, you need to play him and Isaiah together, and maybe you have to just live with the defense there, because this team's never going to be good on defense. But I don't love necessarily giving him a lot of touches where he's posting or setting up from the elbow. I don't think those have been great. I have to look at the numbers, but the eye test tells me they haven't been great. What I do like is that he's kind of knowing where he has to pick his spots, and he's cutting when LeBron's on the floor. Something Chris Herring from 538 wrote as a possibility. He's finding his role there in a way that he necessarily wasn't before. And I think that it's a two-game sample. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how things get handled with the Rockets game and a team that's going to play really fast and maybe make the Cavs uncomfortable. But I like how they have started to find kind of a cleaner role for him. And
yeah,
for
I mean,
it's getting him into rhythm because they need Dwayne Wade. If they're going to like have him on the roster, there's no point in having Dwayne Wade play any minutes if you're not going to make an effort to get him into a rhythm.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not to say really that he's been efficient by any means as a player so far. But as you say, I think you do make a good point in that he at least has defensive attributes that you're looking for. You know, whether or not it's obvious at this point in his career that he's not going to be able to bring those every game or every minute of every game. But you did see, like, you know, when he was giving a good amount of effort against the Bucks, you did see flashes of, you know, him making the right rotations. And, you know, he got Giannis on that one block. But, you know, as a guy who's kind of, like I said, he's just been around for a while, he at least knows where to be, I think, more than a lot of guys on this Cavs roster. So you see flashes of it, and it's at least encouraging for, you know, when it does matter, that he could maybe provide you with more on that end than a guy like, you know, how – essentially, even how J.R. Smith has been playing, I don't really know what the deal is with. He looks like he's playing in mud on defense a lot of the time. But, you know, intelligence on the defensive end, I think, is underrated. And Wade at least has that, even if his body isn't necessarily going to give him the same thing night in and night out.
It would be kind of crazy to expect him to play with the effort he has every night in and night out. One other thing I do like that Lou has done is that I think he is experimenting in a way that I think makes sense. And I don't know, you know, for example, if that lineup of that closed the game the other night with the green at the five is really something that's tenable. But I'd like him trying to experiment and finding lineups that work without LeBron, because I think they need that. And they were +4, and you know, it's the Bucks, and Giannis wasn't in for all those minutes, but they were +4 without LeBron and Kevin Love at the start of the fourth quarter. That's really big, and I kind of want to see if that's a way you can let Wade cut loose, if that's a way you can still have shooting on the floor and keep Korver fourth quarter minutes without alienating JR. I wonder if that kind of lineup where it is all bench with Wade as the centerpiece, I wonder if that's going to be passable for 4 or 5 minutes at a time, particularly against teams that cannot attack them overwhelmingly offensively. Right? Like, maybe that doesn't work against Washington or someone, or Toronto, but maybe it can work against a lot of other teams as they're trying to navigate this regular season.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that a lot of that, you know, that lineup in particular, or lineups that are going to be anchored by, you know, a Wade, a Jeff Green, maybe a Shump or whatever out there, a lot of it is honestly going to come down, in my opinion, to the offensive end, because you know that they're not going to be elite defensively. And so it's just a matter of whether or not they're going to be able to put points on the board. And you're obviously might not have the best spacing. You still do have Korver in those sets, so you're going to want to take advantage of the spacing that he does provide. But, you know, if you're coming down and you're going Dwayne Wade, zero pass, back to the basket, post up, mid-range fallaways on two or three of those possessions, that could easily be 6-0 the other way. Whereas at least if you're running the offense, you know, if you're going to give up 4 or 6 points, you're going to have to score with other teams in those 4 to 5 minutes. So I don't really have much faith in the defense, you know, being strong in those lineups. But if they're able to score generally well on offense by using the spacing and gravity that Korver provides and then kind of running sets off of that, I think that they should be able to survive against most teams for, you know, the few minutes that LeBron needs to sit.
To be clear, I have no faith in any Cavs defensive lineups. I just don't. They're going to be bad. They're going to be bad on that end of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it today just because I wanted to see, you know, if there was any difference between the overall numbers and then, you know, what they've done against the quote-unquote challengers in the East, the Boston, Washington, and then 2 Milwaukee games, you know, the games that we think that they've been trying. And while they did post a 119.10 rating, which would obviously be best in the league, the D rating was still 112.1, which would still be worse than the league. So, you know, they played relatively good defense against Boston and Milwaukee the first two times around, and then The defense against Milwaukee in this past game, as well as in the Washington game, really still left a lot to be desired. But, you know, when points and it kind of just turns into an all offensive game, and the way that the Cavs have played offense against those teams so far has been pretty encouraging.
Has there been anything that you aren't a big fan of, that you have, that Lou has used or that they haven't used, that you're not a fan of, that you would like to see adjusted as the Cavs go forward?
Outside of Derrick Rose, we'll remove him from this.
Yeah, let's just like, I think, from the end of this podcast, cannot mention Derrick Rose unless, I mean, like, you can mention him, but like, Derrick Rose is bad. Mike and I think Derrick Rose is bad. you can tweet me if you really feel like you need to argue about it, but Derrick Rose is bad at basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a few things in particular that I'd still like to see change. I think that on the offensive side, I do think that we still need to try to get Kevin Love more touches in a playmaking role from the elbow. You know, obviously he had an incredibly strong game the inside against the Bucks. He, you know, extremely efficient, got to the free throw line a ton. But, you know, that's not going to be the guy that he's necessarily going to be every night. You're not going to face a front court as thin or foul prone as the Bucks every single night. And so I really do think that there's still more of his passing talents to unlock and, you know, kind of putting him in a playmaking role from the elbow as opposed to a back to the basket role when the spacing is not always great. I think that is something that could be done. I do still think that they need to alter their pick and roll coverages. I've never been a fan of I don't even know. I call it arm hedging. I don't really know exactly what the proper terminology is, where, you know, basically a lot of times it's with Kevin Love where the guy sets a screen. He kind of like runs out and tries to like impede their progress with his shoulder or arm. And a lot of times, especially if the other team's slipping, that's essentially just a basket every single time. And it really frustrates me. I think that the Cavs need to institute a more aggressive scheme in hopes of getting more effort on that end. I don't think that Love does well as a dropping big man at all. I kind of did some video on that, just how he really isn't taking away anything when he drops. He's basically giving up the pass to the roll man and the jumper. And then the third thing, and I think that this has been a problem league-wide in terms of what I've seen, and I think one of the Blazers writers, I forget who it was, I apologize, but I think he wrote about it today, is just that I don't really think that Ty Lue has adjusted yet to the new timeout rules and the new stoppage rules. So I think that he's kind of giving guys a little bit too much runway in terms of how many minutes he plays them in a row. And you're not getting as much break time or downtime as you were last year. And so, for instance, against the Bucks, he rode Shump and JR and Korver for the entire fourth quarter, basically. And, I mean, just without the extra timeouts this year and the extra stoppages, I just feel like the Cavs a lot of times will start to get tired, you know, around 2.5 to 3 minutes left in any quarter when they're playing these guys for 9, 10 straight minutes. And I really feel as if there needs to be some sort of break for some of these guys in the middle, and he can bring them back at the end. But he kind of plays the Doc Rivers hot hand theory, where, you know, if guys are going good or if a lineup's going in, he just kind of rides it. And I think he rides it for too long sometimes. And the Cavs seem to kind of sputter out a little bit, in my opinion. And that's something that's always frustrated with me with him as a coach, but I think it's been magnified given the fact that he's lost a couple timeouts this year.
I agree with that. I think the pick and roll coverage is an issue. I don't know if it's fixable, really. I don't feel necessarily good about saying that in a lot of ways, but I just think, like, when you have Kevin Love and Derrick Rose and these guys that they have, your pick and roll defense is going to struggle. I would like to see the couple little things I would say is I would like to see Channing Frye just be part of the rotation. There are certainly defensive downsides to that, and I think you see that every time he plays, but I think you just see how teams respect him as a shooter still. I think it just has opened up space that the Cavs really need, and I think I really, really think you just need him for 5 minutes a night, and you can squeeze that in. I think you can 100% squeeze that in for for Channing Frye. 5-10 minutes a night. Just get him, get some pick and pops with him and LeBron. Maybe that's a way to get Rose kind of working. You know, maybe a Rose Frye pick and pop on a bench unit is a way to kind of bring the best out of both guys. Maybe that's just a simple thing to ask Rose to do. The one other thing I would like to see more of is I just think Jay Crowder should just kind of be with LeBron as much as possible. I think you're seeing them kind of split up some. Amon Shumpert closed out the game the other night against Milwaukee. I think to kind of get Jay Crowder comfortable, because he's looked to me just a little bit like he's trying to find his place. Not so much like Wade, not so much like Love a couple years ago, but it's still just kind of finding what he's supposed to be doing. You kind of just, I think, have to find what he's going to do. And I don't think he's been bad necessarily. I do think he's just kind of been quiet, and I do think getting him some corner three attempts. I know his above the break 3-point numbers have been bad. I don't have it in front of me, but it was something I think under 20% recent, not too long ago. And I think defensively, like, you have to get him kind of in a mode where he is good, because I think like the Giannis thing, I don't care, because like Giannis is destroying everybody, but he's not been perfect on ball. I think he's been fine off ball. I think he's been better of late, but I think on ball he hasn't been
22%.
Exactly.
22 and above the break so far.
It's not good. I mean, that's an issue. That's ineffective.
No, I agree with you. I honestly have never been a believer in Crowder as a shooter. He's at 29.7% right now. Obviously, he had, you know, a great year shooting, you know, 39% last year from three. To me, Draymond Green also did that one year, and I don't think he's a good shooter. I don't know. Crowder's form, just I'm not sold on his ability to shoot the ball at you know, a high 30s rate. I think he probably is more of a mid-30s guy, in my opinion. But I do think that you make a good point in him getting adjusted and settled. And I'm not sure that he should be guarding fours every night either. I know that it's obviously the Cavs' plan to kind of have him take the difficult assignments and then kind of have LeBron in the free safety roaming role. But I don't know. To me, Jay Crowder is a guy who should be guarding wings as opposed to stronger, bigger guys. Just, he's not that tall, and you guys can get their shot up over him. And I feel like, you know, banging with some of these guys maybe has impacted his shot as well. Just, you know, he's got more tired legs, and, you know, people have said that he kind of came in already not in the best shape because of, you know, having to be with his mother in the off season and everything like that. So, I mean, I'm not there every day. I don't really know what it looks like, but I just worry about his ability to guard bigger, stronger guys for 82 games and that kind of wearing him down before the playoffs.
I think that's a very good concern. And I think, too, he's in a situation where I think he would be someone that would be really interesting to answer about the Cavs' identity, because I've made the argument that the Cavs don't have one. You know, I think the Bucks game was the closest they've had to just having one of them, was that they were playing really hard. That was the closest thing they've had. But I, you know, what is his role in a situation where he doesn't have the Boston system? And I don't want to get people angry at me because I'm gonna talk up Brad Stevens, and because people get mad about that. But if you look at what Boston had, like, they had this specific thing where everyone had their role. The Cavs are just a little bit different. It's a little bit more loose. It's a little bit more informal until the playoffs get going. So maybe there's something to that too, that Crowder is kind of finding his place. And maybe, you know, right, I think, like, against taller fours and taller wings, he isn't the longest guy. He's solid and kind of stocky and very strong. Maybe not the strongest guy, like a Millsap or something, but he can handle those guys. But, like, if he's guarding KD, if he's guarding Giannis, he's going to have a problem. And I think there's also the case that the Cavs just will, the word, he's still in a vacuum, the best thing the Cavs are going to get to kind of to fill the role they're asking him to fill.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that it's reasonable too for him to take on these assignments, you know, once the games matter. I just worry a bit about doing it for the duration of the season and how that may impact him from a fatigue standpoint. And you know, like I said, that if he is more fatigued or if he is battling a little bit more than he's used to on the defensive end, just in terms of, you know, banging with guys, then maybe his legs are just a little bit tired and we see him shooting 22% above the break and 50% from the corner. So, you know, I think that some of the time all of this stuff is related, and obviously no Cavs player is really shooting the ball that well from the outside of Kyle Korver. So it's hard to say whether that the three-point thing is just kind of a team-wide issue or maybe something to do with, you know, how fatigued Crowder is specifically. But it's just something that I'd be interested in, you know, especially now that it seems as if Jeff Green is going to get some minutes as a backup five, as opposed to kind of the nominal backup 3-4 to spell Crowder and LeBron.
This is where Richard Jefferson would have still had value for this team. I mean, I know RJ is older and all this stuff, but like at least having that body would have been kind of nice for if especially because without Tristan Thompson, you're right. Jeff Green's probably going to play more five. LeBron is going to have to play more five, especially because it doesn't seem like they're going to play a lot of Channing Frye there. So what other options do you have?
It doesn't seem as if they have any confidence in playing Osman either.
Or Zizic for that matter. I mean,
Zizic, horrible to me.
He looked bad in summer league too. If you go back and look at that, numbers weren't good either.
I was shocked when it was rumored that he was going to be getting minutes for the Celtics initially because I watched his film and I didn't really see anything. But he to me looks like he's never seen a pick and roll in his entire life. So I understand why he's not playing, and I mean, giving him minutes over Fry just seems pretty ridiculous at this point, given how he's looked.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. We'll move on to Kevin Love here now, but what did you think of Osman's, the 10 minutes he played the other night? What did you just kind of make of what he did in his first real actual minutes?
I guess he was fine, right? I mean, If he's not
he
making
make
any
mistake.
Glaring mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, especially because you know that the guy's going to give effort, right? I'm not really entirely sure what he can add for you on the offensive end at this point, though. And just with how many non-spacers the Cavs are already playing, it becomes difficult to envision him getting a lot of minutes. But yeah, as we kind of are talking about, there is some argument to be made for using a guy like him who has younger, fresher legs to bring some energy and spell some of these guys and, you know, try to get some of these minute totals a little bit further down.
I almost would play him just a little bit just because I do think he's at least going to play hard. And that honestly could have some value on this team. And there was the play against the Hawks where he grabbed the rebound. And just kind of like it was Kevin Love's rebound and they just kind of pushed through. And I find him at least doing that could just kind of funny.
Was this before or after John Collins ended his career?
I think before. I can't believe his first, my large adult son's first NBA highlight. It's really Trevor Magnotti's large adult son, if we're being honest. But I can't believe his first ESPN appearance was him getting yammed on by John Collins.
That's my guy. Wake Forest.
He's so good. He's so fun. He's one of the few rookies that I like. Lonzo's been like awful, and Fultz has, you know, been the thing. But like Collins has been really fun, and I quite enjoyed watching him there.
Portland drafted the wrong Collins.
You're not wrong. I mean, like, even with Nurkic being good, they certainly could use John Collins. Before we get into Kevin Love, into the weeds of Kevin Love, again, check out all the Locked On podcasts in one place on iTunes. Just subscribe to all of them. You'll be a smarter basketball fan for it. And, again, if you want to prep for these upcoming Cavs games, Rockets, Mavs, everyone the Cavs have coming up, do so with the Locked On Network. Kevin Love. We'll wrap it up on this. He had the best game of the season after he had the worst game of the season in the past couple nights. He's kind of flip-flop positions a little bit. He's had games where he shot well. He's had games where he doesn't shoot threes at all. And he's had games where he's rebounded really well. He's had games where he hasn't rebounded really well. You mentioned this a little bit already, and I agree with you that they do need to do more of him being a creator. I think, in my mind, I think him and Wade should be a pairing in some capacity right now, especially with Isaiah out and not having that other guard to handle the ball. But what about how is Kevin Love look for you? This is he is the number two guy in this team. That we know that they haven't given that to Wade by any means. What have you made of how Kevin Love has looked so far to start the year?
I think he looks fine. Obviously, he had one of the probably better games, regular season games of his past tenure against the Bucks. Just basically playing bully ball, getting to the free throw line. 16 free throw attempts is extremely impressive for him, and he now has a over 50% free throw rate, which would be the highest of his career after that game. But the problem with him essentially looking fine, or being, as I touched on in my article, essentially being a similar guy to Kevin Love last season, is that his role should have changed. And obviously the presence of Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade kind of complicates that. He has a 22% usage with Rose on the floor and a 26% usage when Rose is on the bench. This is a second option, or who should be a second option. And he basically is still fulfilling the role in terms of touches and in terms of usage as a third option. And I just think that the Cavs need more from him rather than, him continuing to be a first quarter post-up guy and then a fourth quarter spot-up shooter.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you need to make him a hub at certain points. If you look at his stats for the year, he's back up the shooting close to what he did. He's getting closer to what he was at three-point shooter last year after he was pretty bad. And he's, his free throw rate now is a little bit inflated because of he did. I mean, if you just look at his per raw free throw attempts per game, right now he's at 6.5 a game per Basketball Reference. His highest with the Cavs otherwise was 4.9 last year. And so he's pretty decently high up. It's almost two free throws a game on this Cavs team, partially because of that game. I will say this. I really, really liked how they used him against the Bucks, because they let him pound the ball inside. They didn't just have him spot up, and I don't think you can have him just do that every night. I think that would be a bit of a misuse of what he is and what they need him to be. But I think you can learn from that and try to have him beat the ball more inside. And look, it's also weird this year to me. Like, just looking at his raw shot attempt numbers. First year with the Cavs, 12.7. Second year with the Cavs, 12.7 per game. Last year, got up to 14.5. He's at 11.9 right now. And his minutes are slightly lower. They're figuring out the Rose stuff. They've run a lot for Korver. Jeff Green is taking a fair amount of shots a game. Wade is here now. Kevin Love should be shooting more than 11.9. And he should be getting more assists per game than 1.6. Like, these are things Kevin Love should be doing at a higher rate. And I think they need to – I really agree with you. I think this has to be an emphasis for them.
Yeah, I think that part of the issue, and I touched on this before, but kind of expounding on that, is that Kevin Love getting post touches, given the that he is playing center now, and so he's being guarded by centers, I don't think that he should be getting as many post touches as he's getting. He's now going up against guys who are bigger than him, probably stronger than him. And it leads to, either him really going to basically his favorite move in the post, which is that over the right shoulder turnaround jumper. Every once in a while he gets in there for a jump hook. You saw it against the Bucks that he was obviously able to dominate their slight centers in Henson and Maker, but a lot of the time I think that getting touch would be superior to him getting a post touch now that he's being guarded by centers, because he can use a quickness advantage to maybe, a turn and face, one dribble, right, try to get to the bucket and beat these guys. But also, guys can cut off of him a lot better if he has the ball at the elbow as opposed to the post. If he has the ball at the post and you have a non-shooter in the opposite corner, the guy's going to be digging down on him. They're going to shrink the floor against him, and he's going to have difficulty scoring, especially if the guys are bigger and stronger than him. You put him at the elbow, it opens up flare screens, it opens up cuts to the basket, and it opens up him beating slower guys because he might have a quickness advantage now that he's playing that center position.
Mike, we'll wrap it up on this. Cavs play the Rockets. They are going against a team that will pose challenges for them. This is the Rockets team that plays very fast, that will push the pace against the Cavs without question. We'll try to make life really hard for the Cavs. What is something you think the Cavs can do to deal with that and have a good performance against a team that on paper should be a big challenge for them?
Yeah, I mean, this is a Rockets team that's taking 50% of its shots from three. Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, James Harden have all been bombing away to start the year. I think the Cavs obviously have been susceptible to, first of all, hot three-point shooting. They're still allowing 43.8% from behind the line, but also just three-point shooting in terms of attempts so far. And so that's obviously going to be a large focus for the Cavs, is trying to limit the amount of good attempts that the Rockets get on the offensive end from three-point line. Obviously, they're going to fire them up, but you want to make them difficult as opposed to wide open. LeBron gets another date with nominal LeBron stopper PJ Tucker. We saw what LeBron did to him in the playoffs last year when he was on the Raptors. So I'm over to that matchup. I don't really think that the Rockets necessarily have an answer for LeBron, and whether or not it'll be interesting to see exactly how the Rockets match up, if they're going to start Anderson and Capella, where they're going to put Ryan Anderson in terms of the Cavs starting lineup that basically features Kevin Love at the center and then LeBron and Jay Crowder in the front court. So trying to get Ryan Anderson into some actions, regardless of who he's guarding, I think could be a successful look for the Cavs. And especially if he's guarding Kevin Love, I think that Kevin Love will have a big advantage both in quickness and strength. And that could be a matchup that the Cavs look to exploit and potentially slow the game down a little bit too.
That is something they're certainly going to have to do, is slow the pace down. I'm expecting them to be challenged. We'll see if they play up to what the Rockets are. The Rockets have been one of the best teams in the league so far. And if you're looking at what the Cavs are going against, it, they are in a situation where they've played well against good teams, and they've played down to the level of some of the worst teams, and maybe not taking them as seriously. We'll see how seriously they treat James Harden and company Thursday night in Houston. Mike Zavagano, thank you so much for coming on the pod today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Always a good time.
Find him on Twitter at mzavagano11, and when you do that, go over to fearthestore.com, look at the new shirt we just dropped with Breaking Tea. It is the Arthur Mood t-shirt for LeBron James. You know you're going to want that. It's $24. You can get it in 2 seconds, and you'll have a new sick Cavs t-shirt that you can buy, and it supports Fear the Sword when you do that. So go get that today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of Cavs Rockets, and have everyone have a good Thursday.